Live from Victory Burger inside the Circa Resort and Casino. It's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas and ESPN Reno.
Victory Burger, Circa Las Vegas, Alex Cofield, Vanessa's here. Let's go out to Parts Unknown.
I know where he is.
I saw him last night, got on the flight to come home, and Curtis Terry was in and out. That was it. He was off to somewhere. I think he's back in Salt Lake. Curtis, what's going on? Alex is here. It's Cofield.
Alex, to see what's going on. I'm doing good.
How's Salt Lake?
It's not as cold as Logan, that's for sure.
It was a little chilly,
but the sun is shining, and I'm gonna go to the Wolves Jazz game tonight. So it's my second NBA game of the week. College game last week. Went to a G League game on Tuesday. So it's all hoops this week for me.
I'm gonna ask about your ears ringing from the noise last night at Utah State's arena in a little bit. What is the vibe at Jazz games right now? Because obviously they're not a 63 win team. What's the market like in what the Jazz are trying to do?
That's a good point. I'm surprised every time I've been out here. I mean, I've been out here, I think, four or five times already this year to touch game, to catch my brother. And believe it or not, they sell out every game. And so for a team that is second to worst record in the league, they're selling out every game. They're very supportive fans. They're enthusiastic fans. There's a great atmosphere at the games. They're close a lot of times, competitive. But unfortunately, there's a couple guys short to be able to pull out a lot of these wins. They're in what you call a rebuilding stage, and they've got obviously Lauri Markkanen, a previous All-Star, and they've got a lot of younger guys too as well, and Keontae George and Walker Kessler are up and coming big. But I think they're just a couple pieces away from making a run at it back again, like they have in the past with Darren Williams and Donovan Mitchell and those guys. But I think however the season finishes, they can position themselves with Danny Ainge in charge to try to get some draft picks. I think they're gonna be turning the corner here soon.
The Cooper Flag Derby. I think he'd work in Utah.
You know, he probably would. And I think just the way his game is, and obviously being a kid from upstate Maine, I think coming to Salt Lake would probably be relatively familiar for him. And I know they're not the only ones probably trying to get in that sweepstakes or in that derby like you mentioned. But the kid's a world-class talent, and you can't deny him that.
And number two pick right now for the Jazz. Oh, looky here. Or number three. Two Rutgers guys. Go figure. Ace Bailey, who's a 6'9 forward, and Dylan Harper, who's a 6'6 point guard. So I would say Flag is great ahead of both of them, but they both have some good upside here. So there's some talent at the top of the draft.
Yeah, they definitely can't go wrong with whoever they get, and I think they're positioned to have at least probably two lottery picks and probably potentially three first-rounders. And so I think when you've got that many chances to shoot fish in a barrel, you're going to catch a couple.
CT, there's reports Adam Silver's kind of floating around an idea about 10-minute quarters, maybe to increase viewership. What are your thoughts on that?
It's kind of interesting, right? So, I mean, if you guys remember back during the games on Christmas Day, after the Lakers beat the Warriors, LeBron made that whole statement about NBA, Christmas Day is our day, and talking to the NFL people. And they've been rightfully so over the last few years. A couple of viewership is kind of down across the board for the NBA. Some people are complaining and saying it's because of the high-scoring games. Everybody's just jacking up a ton of threes, which is fun to watch. Maybe it's more fun to watch highlights or digest that information socially through social media. But right now, what Adam Silver is saying is that it might make more sense for TV programming in prime time to be consumed in two-hour blocks. And so all basketball games right now, except for the NBA, are consumed in 40-minute games. And I know there was in some reports there was some coaches who were kind of lifers and purists and don't want to lose that part of the game in terms of you're going to change everything, and that's going to impact not only records for the longevity of the game, but for game to game. But then there was another aspect of it that's going to impact the number of guys on the bench in terms of, I mean, role players and what their role is going to be and how much they can maximize in terms of their potential earning dollars. So I think Adam Silver is obviously at the forefront in terms of commissioners for professional sports. I think he's trying to do everything he can to not only make the NBA more attractive in terms of looking at a potential NBA Europe branch, but what they're trying to do right now in terms of get more people to view their games, and if they're a little bit shorter, make them more digestible, like baseball did with the pitch clock, speed them up, and you'll get more viewers. But it's interesting to see how times have changed just the last 10 to 15 years But that, those are the West, the way things are going now, and it makes a lot of sense. But I just don't know if you're going to get everybody involved in it. Most likely the owners when it comes to that.
I don't like the 10-minute quarters. I think it's stupid.
Yeah. I kind of agree. I think if anything, college should probably go to quarters. College basketball maybe go to quarters, make it maybe match up more with the NBA. But I don't know how I feel about 4-10 minute quarters and just the pace of play and guys how they rest. I know guys will be available more, not playing as many heavy minutes. That cuts down the course of the season, but it'll be interesting to see how this thing pans out.
What did you think? Do you want this one? What did you think, Curtis, of Bronny getting the overtures about the futures deal, and then Team LeBron and Bronny were like, no thanks. Was that a good move by them?
In terms of what?
The futures. Bronny had a chance to be in the futures game, and LeBron and Bronny were like, nah, we're going to take a pass.
I know
he hasn't played a whole lot. Would you have been insulted if he had accepted an invite?
110%, yes. I don't see how that would even be possible. I mean, and it's not a knock on Bronny. And even Stephen A. Smith came out and said this the other day. I mean, it's not Bronny's fault. Everybody would take advantage of the opportunity to put their son or family member in that position like LeBron did. And hats off to him for being able to be in a position to do so. But there's no way on God's green earth that I think he should be able to play in that game. There's a lot of guys that are more suited for him, better than him, that are more competitive. And in the few minutes that he's had it in terms of playing, I think over 13 games, he played 44 minutes, averaging 0.3 points, 0.3 rebounds, and that's about it. So, yeah, I get it. I'm glad they did that, because if they accept that, I think there's going to bring more of scrutiny on them, more eyes on them, and not in a positive way. I think that's the last thing the kid needs right now. I think he needs more time in the G League to develop, and probably, honestly, didn't need to be drafted by the Lakers and go to a different team so he could kind of carve out his own identity. That probably would have been better for him in terms of making his way in the league.
Sticking with NBA here in the Sacramento Kings and Fox, do you know anything of them being open to trading him?
No, I just think it's crazy right now, guys, in terms of what the NBA is going through. I mean, you got the whole soap opera with Jimmy Butler. Obviously, now the Kings are open to trading their franchise player, who, mind you, turned down a contract extension over the summer for, I believe, 3 years, $163 million. Then they're trying to fire the coach in terms of Mike Brown after he got coached a year and a half ago. And now he's saying that he's okay with moving on, but he didn't request a trade, and he's got a preferred destination with rumblings of it being San Antonio to team up with Victor Wembanyama. So right now I think the landscape of the NBA is kind of interesting in terms of how guys are making moves and moving around from market to market. But I think it's even more surprising with a team like Sacramento, what they were doing and building just in the last 2 years, and now they're talking about moving their franchise or star player. But also, it's worth noting that he turned down that extension, but he's eligible for the Supermax to re-sign, if it's with the Kings, for 5 years, $345 million. But if he gets traded and re-signs with the team he goes to, he's still in line for that 5 years, but only $296 million. So I think there was some strategy in terms of him not signing that extension, obviously, before the season. He's still going to recoup a lot of that money, but most likely it will probably be somewhere else unless the Kings make some significant moves to try to upgrade the roster, which they haven't shown a commitment to doing in the last year and a half.
You say it's interesting where the NBA is with Jimmy Butler and all this going on, but it's kind of been going on for a while, right, with Kevin Durant jumping around and all these star players really having a say?
Yeah. I mean, I think that's kudos to the guys, to the players, right? I mean, it's the players' league. They've got the power. The other one's bringing in all the money, all the viewership. But yeah, I think if guys are unhappy, they can now kind of force their way out of it. I don't think that's the case with Aaron Fox, obviously. Jimmy Butler clearly is forcing his hand and forcing his way out. And his eclectic and personality is kind of fitting to the soap opera of what's going on right now. But if guys aren't happy, they can definitely strong arm themselves to get somewhere else if they have enough stature, enough credibility. But yeah, and sometimes it's good for the game, sometimes it's not. But we'll see kind of how things play out with the trade deadline being a week from today.
I'm going to switch it over to some college basketball. UNLV talk, you were there at Utah State game last night. What happened in the first 10 minutes of that game?
Oh, man. Well, anyway, that watched it or knows anything about Utah State, what happened in the first 10 minutes is what happens every time at Logan at the Spectrum. They come out, they make a couple shots, you miss a couple shots, turn the ball over, and they blow that thing open. And immediately they were up 15 points, 22-7. But you got to give credit to Coach Kevin Kruger and his staff for keeping the guys locked in they were able to battle back and cut that lead down, I believe, 9 at halftime. And then the second half, they came out like gangbusters. And from what they did in that second half, the physical play that they showed, the commitment on the defensive end, but then also just to be able to attack the paint and put the ball on the floor, get to the basket, it really changed how that game was played. And I know on the broadcast, me and Matt never got to the point where it was like 4 minutes and 56 seconds left, and it felt like it was the last minute of the game, just in terms of the pressure and of the moment. But from that point on, I know the Rebels tied it up, but then from there, obviously Utah State went on a run and they made some big plays. And I think the more worrisome part for the Rebels was that they allowed all the role players to have all those big moments. They did a pretty good job on Falslev. They did a really good job on Martinez, so he got to the free throw line late. But for the Rebels, I think they've got to figure out a way to not allow those other guys to get going and get so much confidence. And that was really what it was in terms of Allen, Barnes. Those guys made some really big shots for them early on.
We listened to a clip from Kevin Kruger, the halftime interview. But in your words, why was he so mad at halftime?
Well, I can't even match up to that clip with that audio bite, because that was gold. That was classic. And I know Steve got the brunt end of it because he asked the question. I think Coach was basically, for lack of better words, he was pretty pissed off in terms of guys not stepping up to the plate and sacrificing themselves and making defensive plays for their teammates. And so he said that some guys were playing selfishly on the defensive end, and he said, we're not going to do that. That's not how you win. And I think he kind of drove his point home at halftime, it seemed like, because the guys came out, made some adjustments, and some guys didn't get back in the lineup in that second half. But now I'm curious to see how that's going to move over into the game preparation going into the rivalry game against Reno, Nevada on Saturday night. I know it's going to be a big game, obviously, because of the in-state rivalry. But that's a game right now that could propel each of those teams on a run to start the second half of conference play. But obviously, Coach Kevin Kruger wasn't happy about it, and I think he's got to the point where he's done allowing guys to kind of slide for not taking ownership defensively and impacting their team. So we'll see how that happens. But knowing Kevin, when he gets pissed like that, I mean, good things are going to happen because things are going to change, or at least they should.
Yeah, let's build on that last minute here, but we know Nevada's got its back against the wall. I mean, they're 3-7 in conference. They got to be really angry. So you know they're coming in fired up at home. Like, you have to match their energy coming out of the gates. And if that means freaking elbows to the chops and whatever, it should be physical. Both. I would be shocked if either team comes out and they're like, "Yeah, we're not ready to go yet."
No, I 100% agree. I think obviously with Coach Alford and his staff, their group, they weren't expecting a season like this, regardless of the guys that they lost last year. I think they had pretty high expectations. They were picked to finish towards the top of the league. It hasn't worked out for them so far. But I think this is a game where everybody knows that rival between UNR and Vegas. Red, blue, north, south, I mean, there's a lot that goes into that. So I think they're going to come in prepared and ready to fight that game. And I think the Rebels have to go into that game like they finished or started that second half and finished that game against Utah State. They've got to be aggressive. They've got to be physical. And that's got to be their mindset the rest of the way, because when they do that, they've got a really good chance to be successful and win. When they don't, we see what happens. They can lose to teams like Wyoming and so on. But I don't have any expectation that Lawler will not be a raucous environment come Saturday evening. So I'm excited to get there and call a good game with Matt and with Steve as well.
All right, CT, are you? I will see you tomorrow in Reno. Are you up for that Beaver place, the burger place? Are you doing that? Or what are you doing? Team meal? What's the plan?
Probably not team meal. We'll definitely find something to do. Definitely got to hit the GSR and find some cheap tables for sure.
There you go. Sure. Right. Little Vegas? Oh, that's insulting. People don't like that. On either side. Reno people don't like that. And I know Vegas people don't like that. CT, Curtis Terry, be on the call of the game tomorrow. Check that. Saturday night, 7 o'clock start, Nevada and UNLV.
It's Cofield and Company, live from Victory Burger.
Mahomes keeps it on an RPO at the 5. It's a lead block. He goes into the end zone near side. Touchdown, Kansas City.
If you're not a Chiefs fan, that's okay. But resist the urge to fall for the narrative that we're tired of seeing them win, that we might be fatigued of watching KC go to the Super Bowl over and over again. You are witnessing greatness, and just be happy that you are alive to be there to see it.
That gives me feelings. I need to talk this through. Alex White is here. It's Cofield. I need her help. I need Griffin's help. Nate Burleson on the post game, lecturing us. don't necessarily disagree with him on the argument, hey, we're witnessing history, but I'm not super comfortable, and I often do this, and I shouldn't. I'm an idiot. I'm not super comfortable telling people, like, this is what you, this is how you need to feel. I don't.
I did like his wording, though. I thought it was very good. Resist the urge.
Well, but to me, I find that insulting as well. Like I'm above this, so I'm going to lecture you, resist the urge on this. Because a lot of people are like, oh, it's this false narrative. It's not false. If there's hundreds of thousands or millions of people who are like, don't want to see the Chiefs again, and then one of the reasons is we don't feel like they're getting to these games legitimately, you can respond to that by being, you're stupid. Conspiracy theory, idiot. Griffin, chime in on this. What did you think of what Burleson said?
I like what you said about not telling other people how they should view sports, how they should conduct with their fandom. But I really liked what he said in the part of really giving the value of what we are all witnessing as fans of football, fans of sports. It is incredible. It's not just the first three-peat in the NFL. It's the first three-peat in these national professional sports in quite a while. I think it's last one was Kobe Shaq Lakers, the last three-peat that we've seen. So I'm not a Chiefs fan. I love Patrick Mahomes' voice, but I really like watching history go down and being alive to be able to witness it. I think it's a cool thing.
And I liked it because I fell into it last year. I was already sick of it. I was all over, come on, Niners, revenge spot, playing them again. And I kind of prepped myself this year, like, they could win three in a row, and then you got to appreciate it for what it is at that point. So now they've made it this far for whatever reason, Steve. And I understand where people are coming from with that and all of the one-score wins and the calls and things that people are seeing. But at the same time, you got to give credit to Patrick Mahomes and how calm he is in that last drive to get his team there.
See, I can do both. I can dislike the Chiefs and their fans a lot. I don't necessarily dislike Mahomes. I think what he's doing is incredible. I do appreciate it, but I can root against him, and I am going to root for the Eagles, and I don't think it's like, you know, pure good against evil. It's, you know, annoying against evil.
I'm rooting for the Eagles as well.
But I also think it's really dangerous to just say the people who are tired of the Chiefs and who are tired of the perception that the Chiefs are being gifted calls, well, they're just stupid. Let's ignore them. I'm going to tie it together here, okay? Because we just went through an election where Trump and his folks found like four or five very connective talking points, and they pounded it. And there were enough people out there who were like, you're right. I like that. And often people on the other side are like, stupid, dumbass. I feel like we're doing the same thing with the NFL, where people in sports or, you know, other people, certainly Chiefs fans of Kansas City, have no objectivity, but they're like, this referee stuff is ridiculous. You're dumb. Okay, well, I hope we don't. I don't think it's going to happen. But I hope we don't follow up next, you know, 2 weeks from now, and it's like, wow, how 10 million less people watched?
Right.
Because you didn't listen. Now, there's nothing they can do in the next 2 weeks about the perception of officiating, but they better listen. They better listen. And listen, the only thing that can be done on the field is other players need to play better, coaches need to scheme better. That's the only way to fix that. But this constant, like, we see it in real life. This constant, like, I don't agree with you. What you're saying is so outrageous and so ridiculous and conspiratorial. You're stupid. And people are like, okay, I'm stupid. But guess what? I get to vote. Guess what? I get to pick what I watch on TV.
Yep.
Got to listen sometimes.
But it's been a debate back and forth, right? People have gotten to speak their mind and say if they thought certain calls in that Bills game were right or wrong. So kind of listening.
Well, the last time, there's a lot of times when the NFL has listened. They constantly make rule changes and tweak the game. The last time there was, last two times, there was some outrage. One was the overtime rule didn't give both teams a real chance.
Yep.
Okay, so they remedied it. I don't know timelines, but the time before that, we felt like PIs were deciding games. So let's review the PI. And then the officials, basically without saying it out loud, are like, no, F you. We're not really going to review it with any integrity. We're not overturning any of these calls, so stick it. So the sport tried to listen to the fans.
Right.
And then some element in the sport flexed their muscle and were like, nope, we're not going to follow those rules. So I'm just telling you, they better listen on this. My thing is the marking of the ball manually, I'm done.
Yeah.
And now, I love football. I work around football. I'm not going to drop off. But there are times when I'm like, I don't really take it that seriously after the game because I'm like, this is so stupid that we have two guys walking across the field, you know, in different angles and getting cut off, and then the ball might not be marked anywhere close to where it was. Like, that will reduce my passion about football. So I hope they listen.
It is insane when they show other sports and the technology that they use, like tennis, for one, to show where the ball, if it was in or out, and then we're just relying on two people on the field for football.
In New Orleans, on the ground, the NFL is lucky that they've got a great story in the Chiefs with a great fan base, so there's no fatigue there. So that means celebs and people who can really, you know, rich people who can afford the tickets, they're bought in, and it's an event. They're lucky that the Eagles fans are going to be mobile. They're going to come. They don't even have to go to the game. They just want to get drunk, root on the Eagles, and then fight whether they win or lose.
Right.
So that's already made to be a success there. Because there are claims that, oh, the average ticket price is going to be lower. I don't think so. I mean, I'll start looking now. I did my reservations to go down there. We're going to be out there next week for the whole week, a bunch of different shows on Raider Nation Radio and ESPN Las Vegas. I haven't checked rooms. That's usually a pretty good indicator of who's showing up, who's not, so we'll see. But the NFL, while all-powerful and nearly Teflon, is at a bit of a tipping point here. Griffin, am I wrong on any of this in terms of we need to stop with the attitude of, hey, what certain people say, they're stupid. They're just the average fan. Like, they might be more important than you think.
As long as men and women play sports and there are people who are fans of those sports, we're always going to have debate. We're always going to have insults thrown back and forth at each other. I think the important thing, yes, we need to hold the NFL, the officials, everybody accountable if they want, you know, our business, our viewership. We got to keep them accountable. But we also, at the same time, instead of a little bit less bickering, a little more just appreciation. And that was kind of my point with the whole Nate Burleson statement, is I don't want people to say, I'm not trying to come out and tell people how to feel or how to be fans, but at the same time, don't allow, you know, the scrutiny you hear in the media, don't allow these little slip-ups and the NFL trying to catch up with the times, don't allow that to affect your fandom. Like, you love the game, you love the sport, appreciate it, and, you know, indulge in the rhetoric, indulge in the conversation, but just keep in mind, don't take away your love for the sport just because of it.
What the Chiefs, what Reed and Mahomes together are doing is incredible. It really is. They win tight games. Their staffs on both sides of the ball are unreal. Personnel department, ridiculous. They've made you always hear with the Chiefs, right? And what I'm trying to do here is I will build the case for the Chiefs, why they're worth watching, and I appreciate it. This is the, hey, we're going to pay the quarterback $48 to $60 million. Oh, you are? Well, that's when you're going to pay. That's when you're going to pay. You can't win with a guy like that because the rest of your roster is going to get the... No. Where's the depletion happening? Right? Oh, this offense, they can't win. You're not going to pay Tyreek Hill. They're winning.
Yep.
So that's also what makes it incredible. Now, this will irk the fans of the 70s and 60s and 80s, where you're like, these guys are so much better. And I'm not just talking about physicality and size. They are what they're doing and potentially winning three in a row in this era is insane, because systems are in place to break up your team.
Yes, 100%. and the teams that they are beating. I mean, if you want to go position by position against this team they're about to play, I think the Eagles are better in almost every area but the quarterback. And we saw that same thing with the Niners, and that's why they were the favorite last year. But you're right, but the coaches, Spags at one side, Andy Reid calling the offense, it is pretty incredible.
And the cool thing about the Super Bowl is the Eagles may be the organization that should be in the midst of winning three in a row. But because the Chiefs are around, they've been denied, so maybe they reverse the course, change it, and these are two organizations that win five of the next eight. Like, this could be the beginning. And I mean, I think we're in it. We're in the era of dominance of the Philly and KC organizations.
Back to Cofield and Company, live from Victory Burger, inside the Circa Resort and Casino.
Alex White, Cofield, here at Circa. So WNBA season's a ways off, but offseason has had some big moves. Brittany Griner landing in Atlanta, Courtney Vandersloot landing in Chicago, but the big news so far is our ace is making a move, and one of the heroes of the franchise, Kelsey Plum, is bye-bye. Jewel Lloyd came back in a three-way deal. I want you to remind the audience about some of the stuff you would say about Kelsey Plum and her play and her spot in the lineup, because I thought you were one of the critical folks in the market, and I didn't forget that.
Wow, I wasn't expecting that. I didn't know that you did remember. It was more about Team USA, right? You had asked me who Arike should have been in instead of, because people were throwing out names, and I had said Kelsey Plum was the first one. So that it wasn't so much with the Aces, even though I do think the Aces needed to mix it up a little bit. Of course, they're trying to go for a championship every year and fell short this year because the Liberty were the better team. So I do think Jewel Lloyd brings a little bit of a different dynamic here. And, I mean, if you compare their numbers, they are very close. But she's averaging a few more points per game and rebounds that could help. Kelsey Plum does have more assists. That is where I felt that the issue was a little bit with her distributing, and it wasn't always the cleanest. And that was my critiques towards her.
I thought one of the other critiques was emotional consistency.
Okay, that one too.
I think that's a really important one. And anyone else has mentioned it. I mentioned it right out of the gates, and I'm not going to sit here and go addition by subtraction, but I did think they needed to make a change. I think more importantly, Kelsey Plum needed a change. I don't think she needed to be here anymore. I think she's got to start up and make her way with a new franchise. What do you mean by emotional consistency?
I mean exactly how it sounds, and just staying level-headed and being in the game in the moment and not letting things get the best of you, or, you know, getting too frustrated on the court and it affecting your play. So, yeah, I think you make a good point. I think it'll be good for her, too. It'll be good for the Sparks, too. They're a young team, and they could use somebody like her to help.
Maybe she needs to be the lead dog and take the most shots. And the Sparks could probably use that. I don't know that the Aces need that. Clearly, they have a lead dog.
Yes.
It's Asia Wilson. They also have a point guard. Right?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, they have an established person who plays the point. Kelsey plays the point, but in this case, it's more of a distributor at the point guard. What does Jewel Lloyd really play? Because she's a little smaller, right, I think? And so is she going to be more comfortable on the wing?
Yeah, I think so. And that's the other thing. Seattle wasn't working, right? They brought NECA in there, and they were almost supposed to be in contention with Liberty and Aces, because if you looked at their team stacked up and like power rated the teams, it was like, okay, they're trying to make a super team over here, and it just was not meshing. So I think it was a good three-way trade here.
Yeah, I want to get into this more the more I learn about Jewel Lloyd, and also the dynamic off the court and during the games of Becky Hammon and her coaching style.
Yeah.
Like, if Lloyd's going to like that, maybe Plum, maybe that relationship is growing a little bit old. We'll see. I'm sure if I ask Becky face to face, I'll get yelled at, and I'll just, you know, I get yelled at all the time, so whatever. But yeah, if you don't win championships, guess what? In this town, I admire it. Right? And yeah. I think the Raiders need to operate more this way. I'll say it now, and I'll be building the case next week at Super Bowl when we're talking about the Raiders with all these football experts. If you're not on board and you want to be a me guy with the Raiders, then I think you need to go bye-bye. I think every franchise, and it's freaking hardcore, and there ain't much loyalty, but every franchise in this town needs to be following the model franchise, and that is VGK.
That's right.
And while fans get all butthurt and their feelings, this and that, and Marshy's gone, and you know, who go to the pass when they let other guys, Nate Schmidt's gone, I'm never watching. They win. And they generally make the decision to move on and retool the team, move on from an individual, probably a year too early, then way too late.
It's Cofield and Company's Eye on Sports Gambling, presented by Oasis Bar and Grill.
Viva Las Vegas!
Only on ESPN Las Vegas and ESPN Reno.
Circle Las Vegas here on a Thursday. Our regular Thursday guest is Brad Powers, Alex White. Brad's unbelievable. I'm making a living out of this. Alex White is the number one female handicapper in the world. It's been proven in contests, so bring it on next year. Matt Newman's better be listening. There needs to be a special female field with like $5,000 just for the females, and it's winner take all. So let's go. Whoever wants in, the ESPN people, shaky boob lady, whoever wants in, Alex is here. I've got her back. We're ready to go, right, Brad? We're ready to compete!
I mean, it's, you know, I still got one game left this season, but
yes.
I hear you. You got me fired up.
Well, here's where I got to get you. I got to give you kudos and get you fired up, because we want some philosophies on props for the Super Bowl. We do have college football, like, literally every week to talk about. But I feel like if any guy could handle the tag of hashtag stick to sports, it's you, because you mostly do. I feel like every day the relationship with you and Fez is just, it's just different. It's rocky. Man, Fez right now, I see tweets, and there was like a debate over like serving knishes or, I don't know, croissants at Starbucks. And then the other day I'm seeing him, his meal plan is to like eat for, in a 3-hour block. Like, I just, the focus, Fez. And I know you get on him. I know you get on him. I feel like you are, like, Brad's the guy who's just, let's bet. Let's analyze. Let's study. Let's bet. Let's talk betting.
Yeah, I guess I'm not, you know, an international man of mystery like Fez, where, you know, man of many means. I just, you know, I not only the sports, I just stick mainly to one sport. So
yeah,
I saw, though, know, I did have a take on lack of rainfall
in
Las Vegas, and you, a couple people got after me on that. I guess I'm not.
Well,
see, I'm a little ignorant on that. So you reminded me that Vegas uses recycled water, and we're okay. Although, hit me back up in 15, 20 years, though.
Yeah, right. At Brad Power 7. No, I think we're doing all we can, but it's an inevitability. That we could be without water at some point because of the SOBs in Utah and California. Now, I was just pointing out that we do recycle heavily, but I readily admit, like, I'm ready to let my whole yard die. I'm like, what am I doing? Just concrete and rocks. But yeah, Brad's tweet was about, like, what are we going to do in 20 years for water? But you have an exit plan. We know you're going to work the farm.
Yeah, I won't be here, so it's going to be your guys' problem, not my problem.
It's not going to matter. Okay. This conversation is the same every year with Brad on this Thursday, but it also changes a little bit. So when do you start getting into props? And then when are props out? Because I've seen some out. Like, bettable props, are there more out this year, this week, than ever?
Yeah, I mean, there is. I mean, obviously, we used to wait, you know, not that long ago, 5-6 years ago. I mean, it used to be the Westgate. You used to open them up, have a long line. You'd have to wait at like an hour in line to bet props. They'd open up on the Thursday before the Pro Bowl. You could bet like $1,000, $2,000 per prop. Bet like three of them at one time. Go back to the line and have to bet them again. Those days are gone. Obviously, you know, love Vegas, but they don't drive the market like they used to. And other sports books that are, you know, not located in Vegas have already put a bunch of props up already. So, yeah, the prop market is out earlier than ever. Also helps that you have known commodities. These two teams just played a couple years ago. The Chiefs are in here yet again. It's easier to set prop player prop market prices when you got the same players in there, Mahomes, Kelce, and whatnot. So it's easier for the books to price that out. And that's why we have a probably a bigger menu than ever before, at least at this point during the Super Bowl prep.
Brad Powers with us at BradPowers7 up on Twitter, BradPowersSports.com. I'm going to ask Brad first, and Alex, as a handicapper, definitely react. When you're getting ready to play props, do you simply look at value of props, or do you pick the game, get your angle on the game, and then go look at the props?
Yeah, it's good. I mean, I'm always shopping. I mean, because there's opportunity to be had. Just, I mean, I could have any handicap on the game, but, I mean, you get disparities between different books and prop prices, and ultimately it comes down to that. That'll be the best bets that I make. It's just, you know, I'm not saying mistakes, but you'll have great discrepancies between. I mean, hell, even like a Patrick Mahomes passing yards, you'll see great disparity on him next week, especially when the public starts getting involved next weekend on his prop. So that's usually my best ones. But, you know, I tend to – this is a philosophy. It doesn't matter if it's this year or next year or 5 years from now. I try – what you want to avoid is, okay, this is how I think the game is going to play out, and then go make your entire portfolio for how a game script is going to play out in your head, because, I mean, that's a good way of, you know, turning maybe a couple of bets, losing bets, into like 20 losing bets, just like that. So you got to have a diverse portfolio.
Yeah. Brad's 100%. I learned that the hard way. I'm sure, I don't know if you did, but I'm sure he has experience there too. But I remember back a few years ago, I definitely did that, was all in on a game script and didn't work out so well. So good portfolio. I think that is the best advice.
All right.
And Brad, we all have this year's, this one should be easy. We all have the game script. I mean, Kansas City's going to win. Kelce's going to retire at the end of the game, proposed to Taylor Swift. I mean, come on. It's written in stone.
Do you have props that you go back to just about every year?
Yeah, I mean, I hate to sound like Fez, but, you know, generally speaking, second halves are higher scoring than first half, so I always look for a cheap price on the second half will be higher scoring than the first half. What's become more available, more consensus, at least at this point in the Super Bowl prep, is, you know, I could just bet the second half total right now. I can bet over 24, and that's a bet that I have made as far as the second half total of the game. Regardless of what happens in the first half, I think it'll be higher scoring once the two teams get the feel for the game a little bit. But that's one that I usually go to every year. And I'll say, again, prop betting 101, if you want to bet Mahomes or any over, whether it's Kelce receptions over or anything over, bet it this weekend. Don't wait until next weekend. Yeah, you are going to be paying a premium on some of those Mahomes and Kelce and those, you know, popular player props if you want to bet over. So if you want to do it now. But generally speaking, I bet unders on game day. It doesn't matter the Super Bowl, what Super Bowl it is. I'm betting more unders come next Sunday.
Alex, does Team White have certain props that you guys look at every year?
There are a few. Like, typically, the punts, you can look for overs with those because a lot of people are betting those under, thinking that it's going to be a high-scoring game every year, or sacks, too. But, yeah, I don't know. That's about it. And then more player props looking at.
Another thing I ask Brad every year, exotics. Do you get involved offshore?
It depends. If somebody gives me a tip, they got inside info. I mean, the national anthem obviously was something I bet that I made quite a, you know, few years, but that got kind of a popular figure in our industry gave it out and kind of ruined that market where you used to be able to get down quite a bit on the national anthem, and now you can't. Now it's, you know, $50, and
what?
It could be a lot more. Yeah, it could be a lot more back in the day. But yeah, stuff like that. I bet color Gatorade before because someone told me they had an inside scoop. They didn't. It ended up losing. But I've done that before.
I'm not laughing at you losing. That is a big part of it. People have their inside scoop. Okay, a little college football. How many conference odds are out? Because I did see at least someone put out some Big 12 odds for the college football season. Have you seen that yet?
Yeah, I have. That's funny you ask. I have made a bet in the Big 12. They got them up for the Power 4 conferences. A couple books do. The bet that I made, I bet Utah 19-1. Literally just bet that a couple hours ago. I think Utah would be much improved. I like Let's just say I like their quarterback quite a bit. If you can get a hint on other markets and how you can take advantage of him, Devin Dampier, the New Mexico quarterback, I think he might be the best dual threat quarterback in the country. The OC coming over, that's going to be, you know, a little bit more wide open offense. I like the Utes quite a bit.
Well, I got to ask about Colorado. They're 16-1. Actually a little ahead of the Utes. What do you think of Colorado coming up?
Yeah, I've already bet the win total on Colorado. I bet under 7.5. I think it's down to 6.5 now. I mean, looks like Coach Prime's coming back. I had my doubts when I made the bet about a month ago. That's how much these have already been up. But I just keep in mind, it far exceeded all expectations so far for 2 years, in my opinion, as far as Coach Prime. But last year's team went 9-3, great year. But he had 2 top 5 picks in the NFL draft. They won a game on a Hail Mary, basically, against Baylor. They greatly benefited from the Big 12 schedule. You thought Oklahoma State and Utah would be 2 of the best teams. They were 2 of the worst teams. And then they avoided a couple of the best teams, Iowa State and Arizona State, that ended up playing for the Big 12 championship. They didn't play BYU in the regular season. You saw what happened when they finally played them in the bowl game. So they're not going to get the breaks this year. They lose their 2 best players by far. I think a good season for them would just get the bowl eligibility, and I even have my doubts on that.
I remember probably 5 years back and before that, you'd have some high-level bettors and handicappers say, you know what, I don't really play futures like this, where they get to keep my money for whatever amount of time. Has that changed across the board where people are like, listen, there's so many places to bet, there's so much value. If your money's going to be held for a while, then that's just the way it goes for the value.
Well, I still think that the guys that are betting well into 5 figures, you know, 50 grand plus, you know, 6 figures, they're still waiting because you just can't get that much down. But there is there's more people betting, period. There's more people specializing, period. So I wanted to wait this year. I told myself, you got to wait. I saw markets moving. I'm like, my goodness, I know where these lines are going. Why not get a little bit down? If you know where they're going to move to, you might as well have a little bit of a piece instead of taking, you know, a much worse price 3-4 months from now.
Brad Powers with us. Pretty raucous here at Circa on this Thursday. I think it's mostly about the Islanders and Flyers. People are getting all fired up. So good.
Jeez.
Good. I know, man. This is the place, man. It's always loud here, right? It's always loud here. You mentioned, okay, that's the second win total that you've mentioned on the show. It is almost February. It's very early. How many college football win totals have you bet?
I think 5.
Okay.
Is it? So it's not. I mean, there's only probably 20 available, so I bet 5 of the 20.
Anything else that you felt strongly about?
I'm pretty pro Notre Dame, believe it or not. I bet them to win. I found a good price on them to win the title, and I bet their win total over.
Okay.
I think, they had a dream magical season this past year. I mean, I hear you, but they were also probably the most banged up team in college football. I mean, they had 17 different starters miss at least one start. They had 7 full-time starters miss out for the season. So if they get a little bit better on the injury front, I think they can actually be a better team next season than they were this year.
You feel like Chris Ash, good coordinator, not a good head coach.
Yeah, I was waiting for you to ask about that, former Rutgers.
Yes.
He was terrible. I don't know yet, but I'm comfortable saying he's a downgrade from Al Golden. So we'll see how big of a downgrade it is. But I'm not wild about that hire, I can tell you that. But I'll give Marcus Freeman the benefit of the doubt. A lot of people weren't wild about Al Golden. He hadn't called plays in almost, you know, 15-plus years, and he worked out all right.
Jim Knowles, stolen from one program in the Big Ten, goes to another. Impact is something like that. Must have some impact. He's getting 3-1 a year.
Yeah, not surprised he's leaving. That was known for a while, but the expectation was he was going to go to Oklahoma. I did not see him going to Penn State, staying in the conference and going to Penn State. I mean, it's a really good gift for Penn State. We've seen the futures market react. I mean, they're going to be one of the national title favorites entering next season, but last I checked, they still got to play Oregon. They still got to play at Ohio State. And last I checked, James Franklin has 1 win in his entire career against top 5 opponents, and I'm not buying Penn State as a national title contender yet.
Brad, we appreciate it, buddy. We're up against it. Thank you so much. And hopefully we have a little time next Thursday. You can come on and give away those final prop bets and some other plays. We'll talk to you, buddy.
All right. Take care, guys. Thanks,
Brad. Love it. Brad Powers. Brad Powers here to close out the 4 o'clock hour. Remember, folks, in Northern Nevada, you can party at Legends Bay. Get out there. Cool party's going down.